It's Morning Edition from NHPR. The poet Donald Hall had fans all over the world, but he was perhaps most loved right here in New Hampshire. Many of his friends believed, as he did, that his small white farmhouse in Wilmont would stay in his family after he died. So it came as a surprise earlier this spring to hear the house was going on the market. As NHPR's Brita Green reports, the news triggered questions about how best to remember Hall here in his home state.
At Donald Hall's estate sale, the line carves a half circle across his front lawn. It arches from his white front porch, along the old barn, then down to the street, stretching along the pavement. Right at the front is a woman in a gray raincoat. Her name is Mary Lynn Ray.
I came yesterday at 6 p.m. to be sure to be first in line.
She's been waiting all night through the rain. She lives a little ways down the road. She explains she was close with Hall and his late wife, the poet Jane Kenyon. Ray and a few others are here on a mission. They want to save some of Hall and Kenyon's most important items before they get dispersed.
We feel that we can, with certain things, tell the deep and important story of what Don and Jane, both as persons and in their work, have meant and mean to all of us.
Hall's writing for many people was a gravitational force. Ray actually moved to this area after hearing him read his poetry on the radio. He wrote so evocatively of the view of Mount Kearsarge, of his life on Eagle Pond, his relationship to the land and the community. When she arrived, she wrote him and Kenyon a note to introduce herself.
And shortly after being here, they came over, and we had so much that we spoke the same language.
It was a love of writing, she says, a love of place. They became steady friends. In Hall's final years, they had many conversations about how important his house was to him and how he wanted it to stay in the family. That's why it came as such a shock when she heard earlier this spring that the property was instead going on the market. In panic, she called up her friend Lynn Monroe, who's worked for years in historic preservation and is also a longtime reader of Hall and Kenyon's work.
I told Lynn that we had an emergency.
She said, we just found out that Donald's house is going to be for sale and everything in it will be in an auction and an estate sale. What do we do? What do we do?
She agreed, we can't let this happen. And then she said, I promise.
How do I say it? It's the heart of it. The things in the house, the barn, the land, it's the story of the place. And Donald's poems and writings were all about place.
Ray and Monroe quickly gathered more people together who they felt would understand Hall's legacy in New Hampshire. Monroe tracked down the realtor listing Hall's farmhouse and gave a call.
And I said, do you have any idea how much it is? And they told me, and I said, all right, we'll buy it.
$395,000. They also quickly turned their attention to the upcoming estate sale and auctions, where Hall's more valuable artwork and furniture would be sold. That included his iconic roll-top writing desk, the desk he's pictured at, surrounded by papers and books in his obituary in the New York Times, and his painted bed, the title of one of his collections and a symbol of the loss of his beloved wife, Kenyon, to cancer before her 50th birthday. These were being sold at an auction in Plainfield. Another member of the group, Colin Cabot, volunteered to go.
People were milling around looking at all of the lots that were for sale. And right in the middle of the room was standing Donald Hall's desk and the painted bed.
He took his seat, nervous, in the rows of chairs in front of the podium and sat there for 5.5 hours making bids. He spent thousands of dollars of his own money, but he got most of what the group wanted. And because the auctioneer had made some comments from the podium, pointing him out and explaining his mission, people came up to him afterward.
They said, thank you for doing this. You know, this is what should happen to this stuff. And it shouldn't be all split up, especially since he, Donald Hall, had made such a big deal of its being a collection in his writings.
So, finally, the last thing to check off was the estate sale. Mary Lynn Ray again.
I had been adamant that I wanted to be nowhere near the sale. It felt to me like such a violation of Don's and Jane's life. But then the story changed and it became necessary.
This is an old house built in 1806. A lot of highs and lows. Stairs are like this. Be careful, okay? Go slow.
It was just after 9 when the people running the estate sale opened the doors, and Ray and about 24 others disappeared inside for first pass on the house's contents. Waiting behind in line was a mixture of those who knew Hall and Kenyon and estate sale regulars, people who had no idea who the late poets were.
Like, oh, here we are, all the gawkers, right, lined up trying to get something from his private life. I definitely feel that.
Tom Morgan is a reader of Hall's work and teaches English at a nearby school.
On the other hand, I feel like that probably most people that are here, I think I look at it more as a way of sort of honoring him.
Jack Kirk says he was Hall's longtime physician.
With all of the history of this, to have it look like it looks is tragic.
It's awful. It's awful. I'm weepy.
This is Wendy Strothman. She's Hall's literary executor, a longtime publisher, and close friend. The line moved quickly, though, and after a little while, I found Marilyn Ray on the patio out back.
It does feel good to sit down.
She took a seat on one of Hall's old wooden chairs.
Well, I expected it to be chaos, really. I expected elbows. I didn't expect a lot of generosity. Instead, it was calm, it was cordial, it was people wishing each other well, people helping us find things that we were looking for.
It was time to catch her breath. Now, she's absorbing the enormity of the task ahead.
We knew already we were taking on something large, but it's gotten way larger.
That's because what they want to do is turn the White Farmhouse and some of the items in it into a kind of living memorial to Hall and Kenyon. They've thought of inviting poets or scholars to come and work, maybe opening it up to the public several times a year. The thing is, this requires starting a nonprofit, raising enough money for staff and maintenance, and also raising enough to start paying back Lynn Monroe and her husband, who bought the house so it could be saved.
It's not as though nobody thought about this. Don had a real obsession with what was going to happen.
I talked with one of Hall's longtime friends, Mike Pride, about this plan. He delivered a eulogy at Hall's funeral. Pride says Hall tried to make arrangements with existing institutions before he died to preserve the house and the property and keep some kind of literary tradition alive there, but nothing came together.
He couldn't make it happen. He and I and others couldn't make it happen. You know, after a while, you beat your head against the wall for a while and you just say, that's enough of that. It's not going to work.
Pride admires the new effort to preserve the property, but he says in the end, he wonders if it's really the house that matters.
I don't think that that's really what a legacy is about.
Hall and Kenyon touched so many people with their writing on place on their home, he says. And rather than preserve that home, perhaps what's most important is to share the writing. Here in New Hampshire, there's actually a massive archive of Hall's writings at UNH Library, his published works, drafts, and correspondence. The library's hoping to hold a public celebration of that project this fall in time for what would have been Donald Hall's 91st birthday. For NHPR News, I'm Brita Green.